Fee, fi, fo, fum. I smell the blood of a Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The grass is greener under this Medicare podcast. And now, he can tell the difference between a pandemic and a panic, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast once again. I hope it's once again. I hope you listened to more than one episode. This is the Medicare expert that our announcer, Drew McMillan, told you all about, Doug Jones. I don't know how much he really told about me because I never get to hear the announcement, the introduction to the episode until Randy works his magic and assembles all of the component parts. In other words, every syllable that I say is separated by a long period of silence. Randy goes through every episode, takes out the weird noises that I make, the bodily sounds, the uncomfortable pauses, and turns this into a completely finished dialogue. And I say dialogue because when he and I are talking, then it's like a dialogue. It's never a monologue because he won't let me talk for very long before he starts doing things over there that I find highly entertaining, and I wind up losing my train of thought. So what we're talking about today is Medicare, and the reason we're talking about it is that every day, something on the order of 10,000 Americans reach Medicare age. They turn 65, or they're getting to an age when they want to know about Medicare and what's going to happen and what choices they have to make when they eventually turn 65. That's 10,000 people every day. It's hard to believe that 65 years ago, 10,000 people every day were having babies in, probably mostly in hospitals, I would guess. But there is a flood of people entering the world of Medicare. And our job is to help those who want to learn about Medicare, who don't want to be afraid of Medicare, and who want to understand that it's a fairly simple series of decisions that we have to make when we reach Medicare age. And that's all I'm doing, is trying to interpret what is a very complex sounding process into a simplified short process. And I do that by virtue of my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020, by virtue of this podcast where Randy and I chit-chat about Medicare, and then by virtue of our website, MedicareForTheLazyMan.com. And those are the tools we use to try to help people feel more confident in their Medicare decisions. And I keep saying we all the time, and that we includes Randy Carson. How are you, Randy?
Are they going okay?
Everything's going fine. You were mentioning that on average every day about 10,000 people turn 65.
Right.
And that reminded me of another little tyke that's certainly not turning 65 anytime soon, but our announcer and Mrs. Announcer are having a baby.
Yes, they are, and I don't know how these things happen. It was a surprise to me when it was announced that the announcer and Mrs. Announcer were having a baby, but that baby is going to be at least half Canadian. So he or she probably won't even know what the words Medicare mean, because that's a uniquely American invention. The Canadians have their own medical system, which they, what do they recall? They don't really have a big name for it like we do for Medicare, but it handles cradle to grave medical expenses for Canadians, which sounds terrific until you realize that everybody there is overtaxed. And the only way that system can operate more efficiently is to take the care and ration it. In other words, if 100,000 people need MRIs, but they're over budget this year, then they just slow down the MRI process. And in fact, my brother-in-law, Drew's father, grew up in a family of medical doctors. They had their own clinic and everything else. When socialized medicine hit Canada, then they definitely became wage slaves for the government. Their son, who is not a medical doctor, had to bribe an MRI technician with a bottle of, I think it was wild turkey, to give him an MRI during a like Thanksgiving holiday or something like that. It was unfortunate, but it got the job done, and he got the medical treatment that he needed to resolve his very severe back pain sooner than he would have had he stood in the government line. But how about all the people that don't have any influence, that don't know how to go about persuading a technician to move them to the head of the line? Well, Andy was in excruciating pain, and I don't blame him a bit for taking advantage of the opportunity to bribe somebody to resolve his pain. The other thing that happened that was interesting was that there are three children in that wonderful family, and they're all half Canadian, half American, and my sister Emily has made sure that all of those kids have dual citizenship. There was a lot of paperwork and a lot of personal appearances in, you know, various offices, I think. But when she was pregnant with Drew's brother, Robbie, and he's the one who is the nationally ranked wakeboard championship, Robbie had to be born on Christmas Day because that was the only time there was availability of a maternity ward in a hospital anywhere close to where the McMillans lived. So they induced labor. Robbie is just fine. He's an excellent young man and quite the businessman too. He has a wakeboarding school and he has some very successful clientele. But his mother had to have him delivered, have her labor induced on Christmas Day because they ration care up there and there wasn't another time where they could use the hospital facilities in that maternity ward for her birth. So it's just kind of a discuss. Stories like that abound. There are something on the order of 50,000 Canadians that come to the United States for medical procedures that they would have to wait and wait and wait for in Canada. And they buy insurance for that purpose. There are insurance companies who sell American health insurance to Canadians so that if they need it, they can come to the United States and take advantage of that. But our favorite correspondent, Steve, you may remember hearing about Steve over past episodes during the summer. He is a guy who is Mr. Curious. And I used to think Steve might have been yanking my chain because he kept coming up with questions. But what he forced me to do was to do the research and to actually be a better Medicare expert, because in the process of learning the answers to the questions he asked, I gained additional knowledge I might not have gained otherwise. Well, Steve has kind of been silent for the last few weeks, and I was afraid that maybe a bus ran over him or a bear ate him or something like that, but he's back. And he wrote in not long ago and had actually two questions. He said, I would like to hear more about the Canadian health system. And I said, well, Steve, let me do some research on that. And I did, and I found some articles about the Canadian health system. And I realized, you know, after several hours of being asleep, that these articles were not going to be the kind of quality listening that my audience demands. Frankly, reading about the Canadian healthcare system is a lot of boring, you know, trying to stay awake, and it's the government telling you how great it is, and it's the Canadian taxpayers whining and complaining, wondering why their taxes are so high. And basically, driving around the United States, when you see really, really nice neighborhoods, Canadians often say, well, there's really nothing like that in Canada. Certainly not to the extent that there is in the United States. Well, that's because the government has a leveling effect on the whole economy. They have a safety net under the poor people instead of encouraging them to get creative. And they have a confiscatory effect on the upper echelon, the successful people. Those people are kind of taxed to a huge extent in order to pay for the benefits that the Canadian system touts so much. But anyway, Steve helped me out. And he said, well, here's an interesting take on things that you might not have thought about. And he sent me an article or linked to an article. and it was about our senator, Rand Paul. He's from Kentucky, and you might know his father, who is kind of a maverick. He was a senator for a long time, and I've seen him do and say a few things that I thought, and I'm a right-wing fanatic in some respects, and I thought the elder Mr. Paul might have had a screw or two loose, especially when he was talking about national defense, making sure that our enemies understand that we're going to reciprocate if they start trying to push us around or mess with our citizens when they're not involved in unlawful activities. But Rand Paul, I think, the younger, is a little more reasonable. And so here's an article, two pages, about Rand Paul needing to have hernia surgery. And so he looked around, as all doctors do. Rand Paul is an ophthalmologist. And so he understands the fact that if you're going to have surgery and you want it done by the best surgeons and you want to ensure the best possible outcome, you're going to search for a hospital or a practice that performs that procedure over and over and over again, every day, every week, for years. And those are the people that are likely going to have the biggest success. They might not have the big names like the Mayo Clinic or whatever, Sloan Kettering, but they might just basically toil in anonymity, but their practice, their repetitiveness of the procedure in question lends them skill that most other professionals aren't going to have just because they don't have the opportunity to perform that procedure repeatedly. So Rand Paul needed hernia surgery, and you may remember that his next-door neighbor attacked him physically while he was mowing his lawn. And apparently it wasn't a political problem. It was a landscaping dispute. And the neighbor was not trying to get Rand Paul to change his vote on anything. It was the neighbor being upset at the way he was mowing his lawn, I guess, or whatever. So this was in 2017. So his neighbor attacked him, and he was left with six broken ribs and a bruised lung. So Rand Paul wanted to see, I knew this was going to happen. Randy, I either had a fly that he was trying to catch in his mouth, or else he was yawning. If he's yawning, that means a lot of the audience is probably going to be yawning too. So I'm going to try to shorten this. But Rand Paul was looking around for a place to get the best hernia surgery with the best possible outcome. And that place happens to be somewhere in Canada. And so what did he do? He made arrangements to go to Canada to be treated for his hernia in a hospital that specializes, it's a private hospital, specializes in hernia surgery. And it cost him, I think, $12,000 out of his pocket. And the hospital is a private hospital, not a government hospital. And they only take cash from foreigners. They don't take cash from Canadians who are covered by the Canadian health system. So Rand was getting surgery at the Shouldice Hernia Hospital in Thornhill, Ontario. But a lot of people said that he was cheating because he was leaving the United States, and therefore he didn't display the sort of dedication to free enterprise that he should have. Well, you know, those are his political opponents stretching, trying desperately to come up with a method of ammunition, you know, some reason why his action was less than satisfactory for a free market advocate like Rand Paul is. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. He said that, frankly, this was using his own personal resources, not taxpayer money, to get the best possible outcome, and that opportunity existed in Canada. He said there was a hospital in Oklahoma that he could have used, but it doesn't specialize in the exact hernia surgery that he needed. He chose the Canadian hospital because they're good at it, and actually the price was right as far as he was concerned. So he got the surgery, and I'm guessing that he is satisfied with the result because I haven't heard otherwise. And that's one thing the Canadian system allowed him to do, was to go to Canada and pay cash. And his cash was infused mostly into the Canadian health system, with the balance of it going to support that private hospital. So I see no objection to what Rand Paul did to solve his hernia problem. And frankly, I'm hoping Steve was happy with that little diatribe I just laid on him about the Canadian healthcare system and how it involved my in-laws. The other thing Steve asked about was, let's see, Canadian, he said, I got a copy of Medicare and You 2021. And I remember I mentioned that when that book came out a few weeks ago, I mentioned that all of the dudes have longer hair than all of the ladies on the cover, because they have pictures of people, and it's so you'll recognize that all the women have crew cuts. I don't know why. So anyway, he said, even though I'm not using Medicare yet, I thought I would have a look through the book. I see on page 48 at the top a paragraph called telehealth. It seems that telehealth coverage is very limited unless you're in a rural area. And he said, I have heard that coverage for telehealth expanded during, and he calls it COVID-19. I call it the Wuhan flu. I'm wondering if this is a don't ask, don't tell kind of thing. They put it in the back of the book on page 48 so that nobody will find out about it. They keep it a big secret. He said, I had several televisits, and I see on my EOBs, they just show up as regular doctor's visits. And I responded to him, I said, that brings me to the Affordable Care Act. First of all, it's only affordable if you can get a sub. No, that was Steve saying that. Well, anyway, my answer about telehealth is that back in March of 2020, I think the feds announced that because of the Wuhan flu, they were going to loosen the restrictions on telehealth. It used to be that telehealth was only permitted in rural areas, like Steve noticed from reading his book, and also that it was only to be handled not from somebody's house, like on their computer, like Randy and I are talking to each other now. I'm in Illinois, he's in Arizona. But it had to be, they had to make the person go to a third-party office, like a, you know, county welfare office or something like that. The Medicare would not pay for a telemedicine or a telehealth visit with a doctor if the patient was in their own home, and especially if the doctor wasn't in his office. There were all kinds of rules and restrictions that made no sense to me, because frankly, I like the idea of telehealth. I think it's going to lower cost and allow greater access to medical professionals. So Steve uncovered unwittingly the old telehealth rules, which stopped a person from using telehealth to its full advantage. Now, the only thing that I see that needs to be improved, now that they've opened up the floodgates and they've said to people, okay, because of this flu or this this virus, you can now use telehealth in more situations. And I've even used it a couple of times this past summer. But the other thing is, instead of billing as if it was a regular in-the-office visit, I believe the reimbursement for that should be severely reduced, because frankly, if the doctor can be like in a broom closet or, you know, at a carnival or whatever, what are we charging people the same cost as they would pay for an in-office visit when you don't need the office? So I think there should be a deep discount for people using telehealth to consult with their doctors. And that's my view. You can quote me on that if you like, but it's basically the kind of thing that should reduce costs, increase the frequency of communication between people and their doctors, and hopefully get them quicker professional opinions. They can't do a telehealth test for strep throat, for instance. You've got to have that done in person. But the doctor can certainly ask the right questions for the patient to provide answers that would allow the doctor to think the evidence of strep is higher than might otherwise be. I mean, there are many ways to use telehealth for weeding out routine things and concentrating on getting treatment for things that could be serious or things that could turn serious. So I'm a big fan of telehealth, whether rural or not, and I think everybody ought to have access, and I think it ought to be a lot more affordable than apparently it is right now, according to what Steve discovered. So thank you, Steve, for two excellent brain-teasing answers or brain-stretching answers. I don't like it when my brain gets stretched usually, but Steve's questions have accomplished that for today, and I am pretty darn happy that he wrote in with those questions. Randy, how about you? Are you a telehealth fan, or do you care?
Well, I would be, but for the same reasons that you've brought up, we have had some experience with telehealth in our house, and it was during the COVID-19. We had a few follow-up appointments that said, hey, you know, you've got a follow-up next week at 10 a.m., you know, blah, 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 blah. And the question was, well, is this a Zoom call? And they said, yeah. And is it going to be this charged at the same rate as an office visit? Yeah. No, thanks.
Yeah. It doesn't seem right, does it? They don't need to
I mean,
the real estate. They don't need to do anything but just, hang around in front of a computer.
Yeah, exactly. And I would be totally for it if it wasn't for the fact that right now, anyway, we're having to pay the same boat as far as the fee as if you're in there with the doctor, eyeball to eyeball, with the office visit.
Yeah, and you got all that expensive real estate around you. You've got all those clerks and nurses that have to be paid. And so, frankly, it should be coming at a deep discount. And I'm hoping that they finally, you know, because I think there are certain cans of worms that once opened because of this virus won't be closed again. And I think telehealth is one of them. Also, right. Having hordes of people go sit, in offices next to each other in cubicles, typing away and whatever. All those people they found out can work from home. I'm thinking that they can work from home almost as efficiently as in their offices. You may recall that my thyroid was trying to kill me because of the pediatrician when I was a kid shooting my throat with radiation in order to allow me to avoid.
Plus, you stood in a box, trying to x-ray your feet so they glow.
That was a whole different thing. The two things were unrelated. But yeah, I had more than my share of radiation poisoning when I was a kid. But the thing I'm talking about is when they shot my throat full of radiation in an effort to ward off the what other kids were having, which was tonsillitis and adenoidectomies and stuff. And it worked. It worked like a champ. I never had to have my tonsils out, and I never had to have my adenoids out. But what happened when I was in my 50s, when my thyroid decided it was going to kill me. And so before it was able to do that, it was taken out, and I've had to take Synthroid. And I've got a doctor, a specialist in that area, which escapes me now, not a gastroenterologist. But anyway, so this guy is a thyroid.
Would it be an endocrinologist?
There you go. He's an endocrinologist. He monitors endocrine.
He looks at endocrines all day long.
All day. Little bastards running around in your bloodstream.
I know.
So when I go every year, he holds me hostage. He holds my Synthroid prescription hostage. Now get in here or else you're not going to get another prescription. So I dutifully trudge off to his office and I sit there. And what he does is he asks me a million questions. Do you have diarrhea? No. Do you have constipation? No. Same questions every year. I'm going to record them and just play them back for him. But he said, also, your clock is dinging. Did you know that? You didn't even know, did you?
I can't hear it.
Telling us it's like 9 o'clock. It's bing, bing.
That means it's noon. It's noon somewhere, yeah. Right here.
Well, if it's 5 o'clock, let me know, and then I'll celebrate. But anyway, so what he would do during a face-to-face meeting that he can't do during a telehealth meeting was hand me a cup of water, a paper cup, and then grab my throat like a strangler and make me drink water while he strangles my throat. And I don't know.
What was that supposed to prove?
I don't know. It was something he learned in medical school. I think they told him you can earn more money if you master this technique of making a guy drink water while you grab where his thyroid used to be. So we had a telehealth thing and this past summer, so I could get another prescription for Synthroid. And he asked me all of those questions. He asked me like five things at a time. Then I got to go, yes, yes, no, yes, no. And remember, and then what was number three? You know, so then after all the question and answer session, I said, okay, now how are you going to grab my throat and make me drink water? Yeah, we're done. So that was the only thing missing was the grabbing of the throat and the drinking of the water.
Hey, Doc, yeah. I have you ever had trouble? Have you ever had trouble swallowing?
Yeah, I have, Doc. Let go of my throat.
Yeah, with your hand around my throat, I sure have. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to slow down your swallowing capability because that would slow down your Miller ability to consume.
That's right. But the whole thing is the telehealth, since it doesn't allow that, I'm guessing that maybe that wasn't really a critical part of my assessment anyway. So,
No, he just enjoyed strangling you. It had nothing to do, nothing at all to do with the medical.
And next time, pay up quicker, will you? Because I'll grab harder next year if you don't pay your bill on time.
Oh, dear. Well, guess what, Doug?
Well, it's mailbag time. I got a stack of mailbag items, and I bet you're going to tell me that I burned up all of our time for today.
We have burned up our steam, so we need to take the mailbag and let it cool down until next time.
All righty. Well, those little life forms that live in the bottom of the mailbag are going to be disappointed not to have my hands to chew on for a while. But
the Endricans? Is that anything to do, like Endricans?
That might be where they got the name. Yeah, they're running around down there. I hear them, you know, making yummy noises. Every time I come near that mailbag, they're going, ooh boy. So
here
anyway, we're leaving the audience to their own devices until our next episode, but I'm hoping that they will go out and buy Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020, because we got a 2021 version coming down the pike here, and keep buying that 2020, because you may never see it again. Once the 2021 comes out, it will not be widely distributed. And we've got, we've got the website, which is a fantastic place to go and hang out. And in fact, if you're going to be real thorough about Medicare knowledge, you're accidentally going to stumble over the video we have of a drag race between a 57 Chevy and a 55 Chevy, both of them gassers with straight axles, that took place in Bowling Green, Kentucky a couple of years ago. So that's buried somewhere on the website. And it's the only Medicare website I've ever heard of that has a drag race video, you know, on the site itself. So that's a little something extra we throw in at no additional charge. So what else do we have to tell everybody, Randy? I guess we have to tell them goodbye, huh?
We need to say so long, farewell. It's been a lot of fun. Good to know you. We'll see you next time on Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for being such a great audience. And we will see you again soon. But until then, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy, sole proprietor of MedicareForTheLazyMan.com from Oklahoma, and a great, great insurance expert.
Well, you keep adding stuff to that. I don't know. That's a lot of stuff. I can't live up to all of that. Anyway.
Sure you can.
Bye-bye, everybody.